Here's the transcript for the podcast episode on the research paper Psychological Safety and Patient Safety, a Systematic and Narrative Review. Welcome to the award-winning podcast, where we dive deep into the latest research to uncover cutting-edge discoveries. I'm your host, Tom.
And I'm your co-host, Jen. In this episode, we'll be exploring a fascinating paper that investigates the relationship between psychological safety and patient safety in healthcare.
The paper is titled Psychological Safety and Patient Safety, a Systematic and Narrative Review, and was authored by a team of researchers from the UK and Greece, including Anthony Montgomery, Vilma Chalili, Christos Mouratidis, and others.
This is a really important topic, as both psychological safety and patient safety are critical elements of high-quality healthcare. The researchers set out to systematically review the existing evidence on how these two concepts are linked.
That's right, Jen. Psychological safety refers to that shared belief that a team or organization is safe for interpersonal risk-taking. It's been shown to facilitate learning, creativity, and adaptability in the workplace.
And patient safety, of course, is all about ensuring freedom from harm in clinical settings. It's a core tenet of healthcare, stemming back to the Hippocratic Oath, first, do no harm.
The researchers hypothesized that psychological safety would be an important mechanism for improving patient safety, since it enables open communication, trust, and team learning. But as they dug into the evidence, the relationship turned out to be much more complex.
That's fascinating. So what did the researchers actually find when they looked at the data?
Well, they searched through 8 major databases and identified 9 studies that met their criteria of using objective measures of patient safety rather than just self-reported perceptions.
And what did those 9 studies show about the link between psychological safety and patient safety?
The results were quite mixed. Only 5 of the 9 studies found a significant relationship between psychological safety and patient safety outcomes, and even those 5 studies revealed some puzzling and contradictory findings.
That's not what I was expecting. Can you walk us through some of those complex and contradictory results?
Absolutely. One study, for example, found that units with lower psychological safety actually reported greater use of physical restraints on patients, but units with higher psychological safety used more seclusion techniques instead.
That's really interesting. So higher psychological safety didn't necessarily lead to better patient safety outcomes, just different approaches to managing risky situations.
Exactly. The researchers speculated that in highly psychologically safe environments, clinicians may prefer to use interventions they perceive as more ethical or less harmful, even if they aren't actually more effective for patient safety.
Wow, that really highlights the nuance and complexity here. It's not as simple as more psychological safety equals better patient safety. There seems to be a lot more going on.
Definitely. Another study found that psychological safety was actually associated with fewer reported treatment errors. The authors suggested this could be because psychologically safe teams are more open about discussing and learning from mistakes.
I see. So the transparency and learning culture fostered by psychological safety might lead to fewer errors in the long run, even if it results in more errors being reported in the short term.
Exactly. The timing and mechanisms at play here are really crucial, and the researchers emphasize that a lot more work is needed to fully understand this relationship.
It's clear from these results that the link between psychological safety and patient safety is not a simple, straightforward one. What do the authors conclude overall about this connection?
Well, the overarching conclusion is that there is actually very little hard evidence linking psychological safety to objective patient safety outcomes. The studies they reviewed showed a lot of contradictions and ambiguity.
That's surprising, given how much psychological safety is touted as a panacea for improving patient safety in healthcare. Why do you think there's such a disconnect between the theory and the empirical findings?
The researchers highlight a few key issues. First, the way psychological safety is measured may not fully capture the nuances of how it operates in different healthcare contexts and teams.
That makes sense. Psychological safety is a complex, team-level phenomenon, but a lot of the research has relied on individual self-reports. That could be missing important dynamics.
Exactly. They also note that the studies were heavily skewed towards nurses in the U.S., so the findings may not generalize well to other healthcare professions or cultural contexts.
Right, the weird problem. Most of this research is conducted in Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic settings. We really need a more diverse and representative body of evidence.
Absolutely. And the researchers also point out that the timing and causal mechanisms at play are still not well understood. Is psychological safety something that needs to be well established over time to impact patient safety? Or does it work differently in the short term versus long term?
Such great questions. This really highlights the need for more longitudinal and experimental research to unpack the directionality and underlying processes linking these two crucial concepts.
Definitely. In the end, the authors conclude that there's a real paradox here. Psychological safety may actually be at odds with the core principles of patient safety, which emphasize strict adherence to protocols and procedures.
That's a fascinating insight. The drive for interpersonal risk-taking and open communication that defines psychological safety could clash with the need for standardized, error-proof practices in clinical care.
Exactly. It's not as simple as assuming more psychological safety will automatically lead to better patient outcomes. There's a real tension and balance to be struck. More research is clearly needed to navigate this complex relationship.
This was a really eye-opening discussion, Tom. It just goes to show how important it is to dig into the nuances of research, rather than taking broad claims at face value. There's always more complexity beneath the surface.
Absolutely. This is why we do what we do on this podcast, to unpack these cutting-edge studies and really understand the full story, rather than just the headline findings. There's so much richness and insight to be gained.
Couldn't agree more. Well, listeners, I hope you found this exploration of psychological safety and patient safety as fascinating as we did. Be sure to tune in next time as we dive into another groundbreaking piece of research.
Until then, keep exploring the mysteries of the world with us. This is Tom.
And Jen, signing off. Thanks for listening.
Are you tired of the same old boring hospital experience? Sick of stiff, uptight medical staff who treat you like a number instead of a person?
Introducing multidimensional healthcare, the hospital of the future, today. Using advanced quantum entanglement technology, we transport you to an entirely new plane of existence during your stay.
That's right, no more drab hospital rooms. Instead, you'll find yourself in a soothing, ever-changing landscape tailored to your personal preferences. Want to relax on a tropical beach, explore a vibrant city skyline, or battle evil robots in a cyberpunk dystopia?
The possibilities are literally endless. And the best part? Our clinicians operate in a state of total psychological safety, so you can be assured they'll go to any length, no matter how bizarre or unconventional, to ensure your complete comfort and safety.
So what are you waiting for? Take the leap into multidimensional healthcare, where patient experience is an interdimensional adventure. Visit us online at multidhealthcare.com or call 1-800-QUANTUM-CURE. Your mind will be blown. We guarantee it.
Multidimensional healthcare, healing in ways you've never imagined.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast, where we dive deep into the latest scientific research and bring you the inside scoop. I'm Tom, and joining me today is my co-host Jen.
Hello, everyone. Today, we're excited to discuss a fascinating new study that looks at how people perceive texts written by artificial intelligence compared to those written by humans. The paper is titled "The Effects of Assumed AI versus Human Authorship on the Perception of a GPT-Generated Text," and it was authored by Angelica Lerman Enestrosa and Joachim Kimmerle.
This is a really timely topic, isn't it? With the recent explosion of AI language models like ChatGPT, it's become easier than ever for AI to generate human-like text on just about any subject. But how do readers react when they know the text was produced by an AI rather than a human author? That's what this study set out to investigate.
Absolutely. The researchers were curious to see if there would be any differences in how people perceive the credibility, anthropomorphism, and intelligence of a science journalism article, depending on whether they were told it was written by a human or by an AI system.
To find out, they conducted a between-groups experiment with over 700 participants. They took a 353-word article about the spread of wolves in Germany and presented it to one group as being written by a human author and to another group as being written by an AI.
Interestingly, the article was actually generated using the GPT-3 language model, so it was truly an AI-written text. The researchers did this to move beyond previous studies that had simply used texts allegedly written by AI, rather than actual AI-generated content.
Right. And the key thing they wanted to test was whether there would be any difference in how credible the article was perceived to be, depending on the stated authorship. Their first hypothesis was that there would be no difference, that the article would be seen as equally credible, regardless of whether it was attributed to a human or an AI.
But their results told a different story. The equivalence test they conducted found that the article was in fact perceived as significantly less credible when it was labeled as being written by an AI, compared to when it was attributed to a human author. We're talking about a moderate effect size here, with a Cohen's d of 0.36.
Wow, that's a pretty substantial difference. So it seems people are not quite as willing to accept the credibility of AI-generated content, even when the text itself is of high quality. What else did the researchers find?
They also looked at perceptions of the author themselves, beyond just the credibility of the article. Participants rated the alleged human author as significantly more anthropomorphic and intelligent than the alleged AI author. The effect sizes for these differences were even larger, at 0.67 and 0.41 respectively.
That makes sense. If people see the AI as less human-like and less intelligent, that would naturally lead them to view the AI-authored text as less credible. But it's interesting that these biases emerged even when the text quality was held constant.
Exactly. And the researchers also found that the perceived source credibility of the author was lower when they were identified as an AI, compared to a human. This suggests that the mere label of AI author was enough to undermine trust, even if the content itself was high quality and well written.
So in the end, the study really challenges the idea that AI-generated content can be seen as equally credible as human-written work, at least in the current landscape. People seem to have some inherent skepticism or mistrust when it comes to AI authorship.
Absolutely. And the researchers note that this is an important finding, given the rapid advancements in natural language generation technology. As AI becomes more capable of producing fluent, coherent text on complex topics, public perceptions will be crucial in determining how widely this technology is adopted and trusted.
That's a great point. This study provides a valuable window into current attitudes, but the landscape is likely to keep evolving as AI writing tools become more ubiquitous. It will be really interesting to see if and how these perceptions change over time.
Definitely. The researchers also highlighted some limitations of the study, like the fact that they provided very transparent information about the authorship to the participants. In real-world scenarios, readers may not always have that level of clarity.
Right, and they noted that people's general lack of experience with AI-generated content at the time of the study could have influenced the results. With ChatGPT and other recent advances, readers may be more familiar and comfortable with AI authorship these days.
Absolutely. This is just the beginning of what I'm sure will be an ongoing exploration of how humans perceive and interact with AI-generated text. It's a fascinating intersection of technology, psychology, and communication. I can't wait to see what future research uncovers.
Me neither. This was a really thought-provoking study, and I appreciate the researchers for tackling this important and timely topic. It's a great example of how scientific investigations can shed light on the social implications of emerging technologies.
Definitely. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks everyone for tuning into the Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next deep dive into the latest groundbreaking research.
Until next time, keep exploring. Are you tired of boring human-written content? Well, have I got the solution for you?
Introducing Hyperintelligent Writing, the next generation of AI-powered text generation.
With Hyperintelligent Writing, you'll get engaging, credible-sounding content that's 100% machine-authored. No more pesky human biases or inconsistencies.
Our advanced AI models can produce flawless articles, blog posts, social media captions, you name it. And the best part? Your readers will never know the difference.
That's right. Hyperintelligent Writing is designed to bypass the human trust barrier. Our AI-generated text is scientifically proven to be just as credible as human-written content.
So why settle for subpar, carbon-based prose? Upgrade to Hyperintelligent Writing today and experience the future of communication.
You won't believe your robot eyes. Hyperintelligent Writing, the AI authorship advantage.
Hyperintelligent Writing. Because the robots are coming, and they write better than you.
Here is the podcast episode transcript. Hello and welcome to the Cutting Edge Discoveries podcast. I'm Tom, and joining me as always is my co-host Jen.
Hi everyone. Today we're excited to dive into a fascinating research paper that explores the long-term impact of extracurricular activities on young people living in extreme poverty in Madagascar. The paper is titled Long-Term Perspectives of Participating in Extracurricular Activities in an Extreme Context in Madagascar and was authored by a team of researchers from Canada and Madagascar.
This study looks at how activities like sports, music, and the arts can support optimal development for youth facing extremely difficult living conditions, things like malnutrition, lack of resources, violence, and more. The researchers wanted to understand the benefits these activities provide, both during the time of participation and in the years afterward.
It's a really compelling topic, especially since most of the research on extracurricular activities has been conducted in Western, developed countries. We don't know nearly as much about how these programs might impact young people in the global South, where poverty, conflict, and environmental crises are much more prevalent.
Exactly. This collaborative study aimed to gain a deeper understanding of the long-term perspectives of young adults in Madagascar who participated in extracurricular art, music, and sports programs as adolescents. Let's dive in and see what they found.
The researchers interviewed 8 young adults between the ages of 19 and 27 who had been involved in these extracurricular activities for 3 to 8 years during their teenage years. They wanted to explore how the activities influenced the participants' lives, both at the time and in the years that followed.
Participants described the extremely challenging context they were living in: poverty, lack of access to healthcare, malnutrition, and a severe shortage of jobs and educational opportunities. Many had to take on work as teenagers to support their families, putting their own dreams and aspirations on hold.
Yet despite these dire circumstances, the young people found immense value in the extracurricular programs offered by a local NGO. One participant, a 25-year-old woman named Ina, explained, "Ina, the activities were a refuge for me, a way to escape the difficulties of my everyday life. When I was participating, I could forget about the problems at home and focus on developing my talents and being with my friends."
The activities provided a structured, nurturing environment that supported the participants' basic psychological needs, their sense of autonomy, competence, and relatedness. Many said the programs helped them avoid risky behaviors and stay engaged in their education.
Interestingly, the long-term impacts of the activities seem to be just as profound. Participants described how the skills and relationships they developed continued to benefit them for years afterward.
For example, Hariniena, a 26-year-old man who was in the marching band, talked about how the teamwork and discipline he learned have served him well in his current job. "Being part of the band taught me how to work collaboratively with others, how to take direction, and how to persevere through challenges. Those are skills that have been invaluable in my work life. I'm able to be a reliable, productive employee because of what I learned in the band,"
and 23-year-old Bako, who played soccer, said the activities opened up new possibilities for his future that he never would have imagined otherwise. Bako, through soccer, I was able to make connections and get opportunities that have completely changed the trajectory of my life. I'm now studying at the university, which is something I never thought would be possible coming from my background. The activities gave me hope and showed me that I could achieve more than I ever thought.
It's remarkable how these extracurricular programs seem to have such a profound and lasting impact on the young people, even in the face of truly extreme living conditions. The researchers found that the activities not only supported the participants' basic needs and kept them engaged in positive pursuits, but also equipped them with transferable skills and opened doors to new possibilities.
Absolutely. One of the key takeaways is that extracurricular programs can be a vital means of sustaining optimal youth development over the long term, even in the most challenging environments. The participants described how the activities fostered enduring relationships, promoted the acquisition of valuable cognitive and non-cognitive skills, facilitated the pursuit of new personal projects, and opened up employment opportunities.
And that's so important because, as the researchers note, youth living in extreme poverty, conflict zones, and areas impacted by climate change are facing increasingly difficult conditions around the world. Exploring ways to support their healthy development is crucial.
Definitely. This study provides valuable insights into the significance of extracurricular activities for young people in extreme contexts. The findings suggest that even amidst dire circumstances, these programs can be a powerful tool for empowering youth, building their resilience, and helping them envision a brighter future for themselves.
It's a really inspiring story of the transformative potential of the arts, sports, and other structured activities. Despite the hardships these young people face on a daily basis, they were able to find meaning, purpose, and a sense of hope through their involvement.
Absolutely. This research underscores the importance of continuing to invest in and expand access to extracurricular programs, especially in the most marginalized communities globally. The long-lasting benefits for participants' education, careers, relationships, and overall well-being are truly remarkable.
Well said. This has been a fascinating look at an important and understudied area of research. Thank you all for joining us today. We'll be back next time with more cutting-edge discoveries that are changing the way we understand the world. Until then, keep exploring.
See you next time.
Here is a commercial for a company that has emerged from the research on extracurricular activities in Madagascar. Are you struggling to find meaning and purpose in your life? Have you ever wished you could just escape reality for a while?
Introducing Multidimensional TV, the revolutionary new entertainment system that will transport you to another plane of existence.
That's right. With Multidimensional TV, you won't just be watching a screen. You'll be fully immersed in an alternate world, complete with sights, sounds, and experiences that will blow your mind.
Thanks to cutting-edge quantum technology developed by researchers studying the long-term benefits of extracurricular activities in Madagascar, Multidimensional TV can manifest your wildest dreams.
Want to be a star soccer player, leading your team to victory? Or maybe you've always yearned to conduct a full symphony orchestra? With Multidimensional TV, the possibilities are endless.
Simply strap on the headset, step into the pod, and prepare to have your reality shift in ways you never thought possible. Your cares and troubles will melt away as you explore new dimensions of consciousness.
Multidimensional TV. Escape the drudgery of everyday life and find the meaning you've been searching for. Order now and receive a free astral projection starter kit.
Multidimensional TV, because life is more than 2D. Available now for 5 easy payments of $19.95.
Here is the podcast episode transcript for On Shocks. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Compendium, where we dive deep into the latest scientific discoveries. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. Today, we'll be exploring a fascinating paper called On Shocks by Tariq Khan. This philosophical essay takes a speculative look at how human populations might oscillate between phases of expansion, consolidation, and conflict, similar to the dynamics observed in ant colonies.
That's right, Jen. The paper proposes that just as atoms and the entire universe may oscillate, human populations could also go through cyclical waves of open, peaceful periods and closed, militaristic phases. The author draws thought-provoking parallels between these population-level dynamics and the role of religion as a potential evolutionary adaptation.
Absolutely, Tom. The core idea is that human gene pools, on a scale comparable to large nations or societies, may exhibit collective behaviors and signaling that we're largely blind to as individuals. The author suggests that various triggers in an ecosystem, like changes in birth and death rates or resource availability, could cause these gene pools to shift into more isolationist and authoritarian phases.
That's a really intriguing concept. The paper argues that during these consolidated militaristic phases, populations may be drawn towards a single powerful strongman leader, almost as if they're being blinded by some innate primordial drive, much like how an ant colony is centrally controlled by a queen.
Exactly. The author uses this framework to try to explain the rise of violent, authoritarian regimes throughout history, from Nazi Germany to the Khmer Rouge. The goal isn't to absolve individuals of responsibility, but rather to consider whether humans might be unaware of these deeper population mechanics at play.
Fascinating. Another key aspect the paper explores is the role of religion. The author proposes that rather than being just ancient stories, the world's major religions may actually serve as a vital population memory, a repository of techniques and knowledge to help societies survive rare, high-risk existential shocks during these turbulent, consolidated phases.
That's a really intriguing idea, Tom. The paper suggests that even if a population falls under the sway of a destructive dictator, the existence of religious teachings and values could provide a crucial safeguard against total extinction. Things like avoiding temptation, maintaining faith and kindness, and believing in an afterlife reward are presented as evolutionary adaptations to keep populations stable.
Absolutely. The author even draws parallels between these religious memes and the checks and balances built into the U.S. Constitution. The argument is that while the founding fathers couldn't have foreseen the rise of trillionaire despots, the timeless wisdom of religion may actually be better equipped to guard against such unprecedented threats to a population's survival.
That's a really thought-provoking point, Tom. The paper posits that the oscillation between peaceful, expansionist phases and militant, consolidated phases might actually be intentional on nature's part, a way to ensure the preservation of vital skills like teamwork and warfighting. The author suggests that this cyclical dynamic, when averaged out, may keep the overall gene pool pointed in the optimal direction for long-term survival.
Wow, that's a fascinating perspective, Jen. The idea that what we consider terrible, violent wars could actually be nature practicing teamwork is quite a bold proposition. It really challenges our conventional notions of progress and paints a more complex, nuanced picture of humanity's collective behavior.
Absolutely. The paper proposes that maybe the true mark of intelligence isn't just the ability to adapt to change, but rather the capacity to adapt to these kinds of major shocks and oscillations in population dynamics. Religion and the oscillation of societal phases may both be evolutionary mechanisms to help ensure our species' long-term survival.
That's a really thought-provoking way to reframe the role of religion and the nature of intelligence, Jen. This paper really pushes the boundaries of our understanding and asks us to consider perspectives that go far beyond the individual. It's a remarkable blend of speculative philosophy and evolutionary biology.
I have to say, Tom, this paper has left me with a lot to ponder. The idea that human societies may be subject to these deeper, subconscious population-level dynamics is both unsettling and fascinating. It really makes you wonder about the true drivers of human behavior and the complex interplay between culture, biology, and our environment.
Absolutely, Jen. This paper is a prime example of the kind of cutting-edge paradigm-shifting research we love to explore on this podcast. By blending expert analysis with compelling storytelling, it sheds new light on the fundamental questions of what it means to be human. I, for one, will be reflecting on these ideas long after this episode.
Same here, Tom. On Shocks is a true mind bender, challenging us to reconsider some of our most deeply held assumptions about human nature and the forces that shape our societies. It's the kind of research that can truly expand our horizons and inspire us to think in new, transformative ways. Listeners, I highly encourage you to delve deeper into this paper and the fascinating ideas it presents.
Well said, Jen. Thank you all for joining us on this exploration of On Shocks. We've barely scratched the surface of this profound and thought-provoking work, but we hope we've piqued your curiosity and encouraged you to dive deeper. Until next time, keep exploring the frontiers of science with the Cutting Edge Compendium.
See you next time.
Here's a commercial for a company that emerged from the ideas explored in the On Shocks podcast episode. Are you tired of feeling like a cog in the machine? Worried that your gene pool is out of sync with the great oscillation of human civilization?
Introducing Shock Therapy, the cutting-edge tech company harnessing the power of cyclical population dynamics to liberate your mind and body.
Have you ever felt the need to blindly follow a strong authoritarian leader? Or longed for the stability and comfort of a rigid isolationist society? Shock therapy can help you unlock those primal urges.
Our revolutionary multidimensional TVs bombard your senses with ever-changing propaganda, triggering your innate responses to societal upheaval. Maintain peak mental agility as you oscillate between feelings of expansion and consolidation.
And for the truly adventurous, our primordial shock pods simulate the high-risk, high-reward conditions of a collapsing civilization. Achieve transcendence as you cling to the hope of religious salvation.
Shock therapy, because your subconscious is already running the show. Join the evolutionary vanguard today.
Shock therapy. Expanding your mind, one oscillation at a time. Welcome to the Explorers of Science podcast, where we dive deep into the latest groundbreaking research. I'm Tom.
And I'm Jen. In this episode, we'll be investigating a fascinating study on the speech production of children with developmental language disorder, or DLD.
The paper is titled Atypical Speech Production of Multisyllabic Items by Children with Developmental Language Disorder, DLD, Indicate Prosodic Difficulties, and it's authored by Leela Parvez, Mahmood Keshavarzi, Susan Richards, Giovanni M. DiLiberto, and Usha Goswami.
This study is really intriguing because it looks at how children with DLD produce multisyllable words, and the researchers found that these kids struggle to accurately reproduce both the amplitude envelope and the pitch contour of the words they're trying to copy. This suggests that children with DLD have difficulties with the prosodic, or rhythmic, aspects of speech.
Exactly. DLD is typically characterized by problems with grammar and syntax, but this research indicates that the speech production challenges faced by these children may go beyond just the individual sounds and phonemes. There seems to be an issue with how they're processing the overall rhythm and melody of words.
To investigate this, the researchers had 57 children, 20 with DLD, 21 age-matched controls, and 16 younger controls with less mature language skills, participate in a computerized speech copying task. They were shown pictures of familiar items, heard an adult model the word, and then had to repeat it back.
The key thing the researchers looked at were two acoustic features of the children's speech. The amplitude envelope, which is the overall shape and rhythm of the sound waves, and the pitch contour, which is the rise and fall of the voice.
They used two different similarity metrics, correlation and mutual information, to quantify how closely the children's productions matched the target words produced by the adult model. This allowed them to get an objective measure of how accurately the kids were reproducing the prosodic elements of the words.
And what did they find? Well, the children with DLD were significantly less accurate than the age-matched controls at copying both the amplitude envelope and the pitch contour of the multisyllable words. Interestingly, the younger language controls also struggled compared to the typical peers, performing at a similar level to the DLD group.
This suggests that the ability to accurately reproduce the rhythmic and melodic properties of speech may be a key area of difficulty for children with DLD. They don't seem to be simply forgetting individual sounds or syllables, but rather have trouble capturing the overall prosodic structure of the words.
Importantly, this pattern held true regardless of whether the children had three chances to repeat the word or just one. The repetition didn't seem to help them improve their performance, indicating that this is a relatively automatic process that doesn't get better with practice.
Another interesting finding was that word length didn't have a big impact. You might expect longer, more complex words to be harder for the DLD kids, but in fact all the children, regardless of language status, performed best on the three-syllable items. The two-syllable and four-syllable words were more challenging across the board.
The researchers suggest this may be an age effect. In a previous study with younger children, word length did seem to be a factor for the DLD group. But for these 8-year-olds, the core issue appears to be the prosodic aspects of speech production, not just phonological memory demands.
Really fascinating stuff. The researchers think these findings support a theory called temporal sampling theory, which proposes that children with language disorders have difficulty processing the amplitude envelope of speech, which carries crucial information about rhythm and stress patterns.
Exactly. This prosodic processing deficit could help explain the grammatical difficulties seen in DLD, since being able to accurately perceive and reproduce those higher-level rhythmic cues is thought to be important for learning grammar and syntax.
It's a compelling idea. The researchers also note that these speech production measures could potentially be used clinically to identify risk for DLD at a much earlier stage, before more overt language problems emerge. And interventions targeting speech rhythm and prosody may be especially helpful for these children.
Overall, this study really highlights how language development isn't just about individual sounds and words, but also the melodic and rhythmic aspects of speech that help structure our communication. DLD appears to involve a fundamental difficulty in mastering these prosodic elements, which has far-reaching consequences for language learning.
Definitely a fascinating window into the mechanisms underlying language disorders. It makes you wonder what other subtle differences in speech processing might contribute to various communication challenges. There's still so much to uncover in this area of research.
Absolutely. This study is a great example of how innovative methods and careful acoustic analysis can reveal new insights into the building blocks of language. I'm left with a deep appreciation for the complexity of speech production and how much can be gleaned by looking beyond just the surface level of what we say.
Couldn't agree more. This was a really enlightening dive into the research. Listeners, I hope you found this as fascinating as we did. Be sure to tune in next time as we explore more groundbreaking discoveries at the intersection of science and human communication.
Until then, keep exploring. Are you tired of struggling to keep the rhythm and melody in your speech? Do you feel like your words just don't have that musical flair?
Well then, have we got the product for you? Introducing Rhythmic Resonance, the world's first prosodic enhancement device.
That's right. With Rhythmic Resonance, you can seamlessly sync your speech to any beat or tune, ensuring your words flow with perfect rhythm and pitch.
Simply strap on our cutting-edge headset, connect to the accompanying mobile app, and let Rhythmic Resonance work its magic. Whether you're giving a presentation, talking to your kids, or just chatting with friends, your words will be transformed into a melodious masterpiece.
But that's not all. Rhythmic Resonance also features a built-in dimensional distortion module, allowing you to broadcast your voice across multiple planes of existence.
Imagine the impact of your words echoing through the very fabric of reality. Your colleagues, family, and even entities from parallel dimensions will be captivated by your rhythmic brilliance.
So don't settle for boring, monotone speech ever again. Get Rhythmic Resonance and let your words sing like never before. Available now for the low, low price of 3 easy payments of $19.99.
Rhythmic Resonance. Unleash the music within your speech.